Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, good afternoon, and welcome back to another exciting adventure here on Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie. And at the bottom of the hour, our co-host, Cool Mike, will be joining us. At this moment, he is tending to a friend who lost a brother, so he will be joining us later on in the show. And we will be having a fantastic guest today. Jerome Kersey will be coming back on board. And we'll be talking to him about his two new books out there, both available on the Kindle. And you can download them from Amazon.com. If you go to our show page and just click on the link on the show page, and you can get one of his two new books. He's got The Great Oil Conspiracy, and his latest release is President Obama's Plan to Bankrupt the USA. He's got a third book coming out in next month in February, so we'll be talking to him about that. I want to remind everyone that is listening in to please join our new, brand new website that we just drew up last month called southernsense.webs.com. There is a link in the chat room, so click on that and become a member. There is a contest page there where we are raffling off to one listener that is a member of that page who makes a donation to the Independence Fund, the DVD, autographed DVD, from Todd Allen Herndon of his video, My Name is America. So we got a lot of exciting and great things coming up. Upcoming shows will include this coming Friday, we're going to have Evan Sayet. Evan is a comedian who did the writing for Bill Maher. Now, we're going to have fun asking him how a conservative comedian can write for Bill Maher and still keep the contents in his stomach down. So we'll be talking to him Friday. And after that, we have a fantastic musical group called Madison Rising. And if you check out Madison Rising up on YouTube, they've got an absolute astounding video doing the Star Spangled Banner. And this is a bunch of young guys. The lead singer is a former Navy corpsman, and he does all patriotic songs, but not as you know them. And it appeals to the younger generation, and that's what we need in this conservative movement, younger people in here, and I think these are the guys to help bring them into the conservative side of issues. It's going to be a fantastic show on that. That'll be next Tuesday. And then we're going to have followed with Kevin Freeman, who is an author who's got a great book out. We'll be talking to him, and we'll be bringing back Brett Bratton. So we've got fantastic shows all lined up. For those who listen, know that every show we dedicate is to a fallen hero. And unfortunately, I don't have Cool Mike to help me with this today, so just bear with me as I muddle through it without my right hand. So, Mike, we miss you. Anyway, our dedication today is to Army Staff Sergeant Kimberly A. Volz, who was killed in action on December 14th of 2003 during Operation Iraqi Freedom. So bear with me as I pull up our music and start our dedication. So this is from Associated Press. I put together these two articles into a single one, and it reads, Army Staff Sergeant Kimberly A. Volz died December 14th, 2003, serving during Operation Iraqi Freedom. Army Staff Sergeant Volz, 27, of Carlisle, Pennsylvania, was assigned to the 703rd Explosive Ordnance Detachment based in Fort Knox, Kentucky. She was killed while responding to an explosive ordnance disposal call December 14th when an improvised explosive device detonated in Iraq. Friends remember the soldier killed in Iraq as a tough tomboy. The tough tomboy had a quirky side, too. Staff Sergeant Kimberly Volz had to be tough. She was the only woman in a unit of specially trained soldiers who dashed into a war zone looking for hidden explosives. But the same blonde-haired tomboy who loved to roll around with the dogs in the backyard decorated her bedroom in antique furniture and white lace, and could whip up a tasty chocolate cake with peanut butter icing that made Nikki Puig, a friend who met Volz at Fort Knox. Puig was one of about 100 friends and fellow soldiers who packed into the main host chapel at Fort Knox for a service to mourn the death of Volz, who was killed in Iraq. You couldn't be around her and not instantly want to be around her more and more, Puig said. She made you feel good about yourself. Anything around you, you couldn't be in a bad mood around her. Puig remembered the first time she saw Volz's elegant bedroom and was surprised. When I first walked into the bedroom, but all, but yeah, Volz told her, but this thing, that Volz said the profile was the low woman. The unit left for Iraq in September 2005. Her commander in Iraq, Captain Chad Sampson, said Volz was headed to quite a future in the war. Volz was just a better hour's way. She died in her husband's house hours after his device was trying to defuse one of them. Her husband was an he was there to hold her to die. God wanted her to father, coach. Oh, 1997.
where Alice challenged you. And her husband told the song that close to Kentucky. The two met while an explosive ordnance disposal school at Indian Head, Maryland. They married in June of 1999, and she later joined him at Fort Knox, where she became a team leader in her ordnance group. The two were members of separate teams, Mac teams, and she did 5-7 missions a day. She was a soldier that lost his wife and somehow did so. They would not thought it would have chose such a dangerous festival. My sister had been here double all. It was nothing she did wrong. We want people to understand circumstances she died under. She was in hostile areas, even though people say the war is over there, we said. Her mother was also held revolt in Iraq. Her husband attended that service. Her name is placed in a memorial for fallen members of arrived at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware. She was buried at Indian Gap. Yes, start for the first time. Now, I am a U.S. Army 7th Great Police. We have a saying which God. Teachers will remember her name as a wife, daughter, friend, and fellow soldier. I salute your wife, Sam, Sergeant Spoke. Godspeed. at her almost every day. And everyone that has died over there shall not be forgotten. Chad Bannstock. This is to Staff Sergeant Kimberly Voltz and to all men and women out there serving who have given and are giving. They're all for us. My name is America.
Of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll rise up from the flames, and I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America, don't tread on me. America is my name. My strength was not taken from others, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the
the raffle to win his autographed DVD, the video of the song My Name is America. It's a fantastic video. So go to 7cents.webs.com and follow the contest rules there. If you noticed, I put up a picture of the DVD, of the autographed DVD, up in the contest room. And if you'll notice in the top two corners. You'll see like little scratches on the cover, and that's where Todd Allen was using his teeth trying to take the cellophane off so he could autograph the DVD cover. So, yes, you get his personal teeth marks on the DVD. All right. We're waiting for our guest, Jerome Kersey, to call in. Dr. Kersey should be calling in shortly. He's our guest for the day. He's got a great website up. It's called 1776 Nation. We're going to be talking to him about that, as well as his new books he's got out. He's got Obama's plan to bankrupt the USA. He's also got, what's the other one? I'm going to think of it in a second. It happens to do with the link between Saul Alinsky and Obama. And the other one is about oil. So we'll be talking to him shortly. Our last show, we had four fantastic guests on. We were talking about, among all things, this new assault on the Second Amendment and their attempt to restrict our ability to own guns. And that was a fantastic show. We had so much fun on that. And I came across this article just yesterday. Jennifer Granholm is now, she's the governor in Michigan, which I wish Mike was here because he knows more about her than anything since he lives in Michigan. She is attempting now to restrict the types of bullets. Now, I agree, armor-piercing bullets, they should only be used for the military, being a retired police officer. You really don't want to have a perp out there having these bullets. All right, I can understand that. But you have Mayor Bloomberg attempting to restrict a number of rounds you have in your clip. Clips run with 10, 15 rounds in a clip. They do not make clips with 7 rounds. So they're basically telling people you've got to go into your clip and remove 3 rounds. Great. Now here you are, a law-abiding citizen, and you only have 7 rounds, and you're facing a perpetrator who's got 15 rounds. Odds are they're going to be in favor of the perpetrator, the criminal. So you restrict law-abiding citizens, and you do not allow them to have equal firepower against a criminal. Now, how does this make us safer? Just how does this make us safer? It just makes absolutely no sense. And they're going to continue to do more and more assaults on our Second Amendment. Recently, North Carolina had a gun show on Saturday. Saturday was a huge nationwide outreach for people to express their Second Amendment rights. And unfortunately, there was some accidental shootings. Now, I'm waiting to see who is going to be the first person who comes out on legislation to restrict gun shows now. Now, I have no idea where they're going to be going with this, but we have our own government that has Fast and Furious. They are giving weapons away to criminals. So rather than restricting the ability of criminals to get weapons, they're going to restrict law-abiding citizens from getting weapons. So therefore, they disarm law-abiding citizens, and the only people with weapons will be non-law-abiding individuals. Not even citizens. Not even citizens. Illegal aliens, criminals, will have the weapons and not us. And how do we defend ourselves? Oh, we're supposed to dial 911 while the guy's walking into the house. And somewhere between dialing 911, you'll be taking a bullet. Not a legal bullet, an illegal bullet. And to me, it makes absolutely no sense. Okay, I do believe this may be our guest calling in, and as soon as our keyboard comes up, and I do believe this is Dr. Jerome Kersey. Is this Dr. Kersey? Okay, my board is not, there we go, let's try this again. Is this Dr. Kersey? Area code 502, you're on the air live. Who am I speaking to?
This is Isaiah from Kentucky. I didn't know that I'd actually gotten to your queue. I was just trying to listen in.
Oh, okay. Did you have a comment to make or add to the show?
No, I was just trying to listen to the show. I never tried to enter the queue.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to put your mic on mute, and then you can enjoy and listen in. We're waiting for our guests to call in now. So enjoy. All right. We're waiting for Dr. Corsi to call in. And in the interim, I'm going to be playing this piece about the GOP lawmakers seeking documents on Fast and Furious, which they have not yet gotten. Fast and Furious occurred back in 2009. This is now 2013. 4 years have gone by, and we're still getting stalled by Holder and his cronies. So this is...
Have you and your attorneys produced internally the materials responsive to the subpoenas?
We believe that we have responded to the subpoena.
No, Mr. Attorney General, you're not a good witness. A good witness answers the question asked. So let's go back again.
Well, it was just last June when we saw that now infamous exchange between Daryl Issa, who chairs the House Oversight Committee, and Attorney General Eric Holder in the Fast and Furious investigation. And their relationship has not apparently improved much since then. ISIS committee has now filed a lawsuit, a civil lawsuit, against Mr. Holder, seeking to force him to release key documents related to this probe into whether our government intentionally allowed guns to walk into the hands of some very dangerous Mexican criminals, at least one of which was found at the death scene of an American Border Patrol agent. Joining me now for a fair and balanced discussion, Julian Epstein, former chief counsel of the House Judiciary Committee, and Jay Sekulow, who's chief counsel of the American Center for Law and Justice. So you are an excellent panel to discuss this with, which is why we've been doing it for so many months. But particularly today, Julian, because you were the legal guy on the House counsel that did before what this House committee did today, go into civil court and try to get a contempt citation enforced. Explain exactly what they've done today and how it's going to play out in the immediate days and weeks.
Well, as Jay and I have discussed in your program before, this is the method that a committee now uses to enforce a contempt citation, largely because the U.S. attorney would not convene a grand jury and prosecute the case, and that's true in every administration, Republican and Democrat. And what the House will do is try to go in and get either a declaratory judgment or maybe a writ of mandamus that will require the Justice Department to produce more than it has done. I think, Megan, and I would point out I'm 3 for 3 in the last predictions I've made on this show, the Edwards case, the healthcare case, and the Arizona immigration case.
Well done.
I think the likelihood of them prevailing is very, very low because of the standards that previous cases have set. The standard is basically that the House must show that it's essential to its legislative function, one, and two, that there hasn't been an accommodation that's been attempted to be made by the Justice Department, and particularly on the latter, given that the Justice Department has provided 8,000 documents, testified 8 times, had umpteen interviews with the committee. I think it's very, very unlikely the court would find that there hasn't been an accommodation, and especially as well because the committee has conceded that the Justice Department has provided it all of the information on the operational question on Fast and Furious. The only question now is how is it the Justice Department made a mistake in the February 4th letter?
Well, and whether it was
Senator Grassley
and whether it was a mistake. Let me jump in because I want to get to Julian on this. Let's talk about this, Julian, because the Congress is going to say it is an essential piece of information because you can't lie to Congress. And there have been cases that say that is an essential function, haven't there? But let's say, like, if the Congress is looking into whether they've been lied to by an administration official, that would qualify as an essential investigation, no?
Correct. Yes, it does.
And okay, so now what about Julian's second point about whether the information, whether an accommodation has been offered? Can Justice and Mr. Holder show that they have offered an accommodation on those documents that speak to whether they intentionally misled Senator Grassley and others?
And the answer is going to be that they're going to try to make that assertion, but I think the answer to it is going to be no, and that they have not succeeded in doing that. And generally what happens, I do a lot of civil litigation in federal courts. The judge is going to get together here and say, hey, where can we accommodate? What other documents can be given? So there could be a compromise here which gives documents. Remember what the chairman is focusing on here is both the operational aspects, but really leading to the false and fraudulent statements and letters made by the Department of Justice hierarchy a letter that was approved by the Attorney General that said there was no gun running, there was no gun walking, none of this happened, and then 8 months, 9 months later, they have to pull that letter back and the cover-up that took place there, and there is no privilege for the cover-up that took place. So what you're going to have here is you're going to have real litigation with the parties bringing the issue, but I think at the end of the day, and then Julian's bragging about a 3-for-3 record. One case, by the way, the Edwards case, Julian and I agreed. Arizona was a split decision, and I do have to give it to him that he was right on Obamacare. That may change with the election in a few months. But I will say this, though.
As I recall, you guys were too chicken to really go on record right before Obamacare decision came out.
I'm trying to be fair to Julian, and I think you're going to see that the Republicans are going to mount quite a challenge in the electoral campaign on that issue as well. But at the end result here, I think what's going to happen is the Department of Justice probably will put forward some more documents to see if an accommodation can be made. But this is the process. You know, this is, I think Julian would agree with me here, this is the beauty of the American experiment, if you will, if you want to call it, from our founding. This type of litigation is what makes our country unique from everybody else. We are now in a court of law.
Words from Jay Sekulow, the contempt proceeding against Attorney General Holder is beautiful. It's what's beautiful about the American process. Julian, I want to ask you this, but let me shift gears with you before, because we've asked this a little bit, but I want to get to today. It is now time for the DOJ to really put up or shut up with the judge. They can say to ISA, you know, in the Congress, you're not getting any more. But they can't say that to the judge. They're going to have to show their cards to this judge, no?
No, and I think that's the point. Yes and no. I think that's the point that the question misses and that Jay misses. First of all, the question about this cover-up or whether there was a lying to Congress and whether they can easily meet that standard, there's no evidence of any cover-up. There's no evidence of any intentional lying. The Justice Department in the February 4th letter
approved the letter. What was it, unintentional lying?
Letter.
I mean, Julian.
Let me finish the point, Jay. Mistakenly said that they did not continue the Bush policy of letting guns walk.
But that's the question about whether it was a mistake. That's the question.
Let me finish the point.
Quickly, because I got a heartbreak coming.
There's no evidence that senior Justice Department officials knew about that. But more importantly, look at the case under the Bush administration as what happened on the DOJ attorney firing scandal. What the court said there when the House Judiciary went to Congress and tried to get a declaratory judgment, the court said that the accommodation that the White House had to make with the House Judiciary Committee was for them to meet. It didn't require any production of documents because executive privilege had been declared.
But okay. The Justice Department here, sorry, met with the committee. I'm going to cut you off. Got to go. Julian, Jay, always a pleasure.
This is
Thank
about
you, sir.
Documents. Thanks.
That was beautiful.
Thanks.
Coming up.
All right. As usual, you got the left spinning us crazy. And it looks like we have our co-host on. Cool Mike, good afternoon. Mike, you out there? Area code 616? Okay, I thought I had my co-host here. All right, we also have another call calling in, and your host, the man that called the ghost. Good afternoon. You're on the air live with Southern Sense.
Yeah. What's this about? Is it what's the show about? What's the topic so far?
Well, I was talking about the assault on our Second Amendment and comparing it to the way the administration's handling it with Fast and Furious and now trying to deny guns to legal owners.
How are they trying to deny guns to legal owners?
They're trying to say they're going to put restrictions on semi-automatics without properly defining the difference between a fully automatic and a semi-automatic. They're trying to restrict the type of rounds. They're trying to restrict the amount of rounds. You already have Bloomberg and the New York State Legislature that are saying that you should have only a clip of 7 when they do not manufacture 7-round clips. So they're basically making it illegal to have a clip. Is that not an assault on the Second Amendment?
No, not really.
Why is that not an assault on our ability to possess guns?
Okay, first of all, I want to talk about the universal background checks, which you failed to mention. Do you think those are a good or bad idea?
Background checks are a good idea, but they are the state right, not a federal.
Why are universal
each individuals each individual state has their own requirements for background checks. Now, I do agree that when you do go into a gun show and someone wants to sell a gun privately, a background check should still be done. I will agree with that. Guns should not be given to people that have criminal backgrounds or a verifiable mental defect that would prevent them from responsibly owning a firearm. I will agree with that.
Okay, I just wanted to get that part out of the way. Because I do hear a lot of conservatives saying, no gun laws, no background checks, that's an, you know, that crazy stuff. But so ban or restrictions anyway on semi-automatics.
Do you know what a semi-automatic gun is?
Yes, I do. You pull the trigger once, it shoots once. You don't. I know the difference between semi and auto.
Okay. And then that means that the 9mm firearms that every single New York City police officer currently carries, and is authorized to carry, would then be outlawed if you outlaw semi-automatic firearms.
They're not outlawing them. They're just restricting them to certain people.
Why? Why is it that an illegal or a criminal can walk around with a semi-automatic firearm and I'm restricted to what? A 5 or 6 round revolver? Are you kidding me? Where's the logic in that? Why can't I carry a 22 or a 25 or a 9mm or a 45 cal? What I choose to purchase is what I choose to purchase as long as I handle it in a legal fashion.
Look, I'm not
going out robbing a bank. But if a person decides to go into a bank and rob it, I would like to be able to defend myself and my fellow legal citizen.
And that's where I have the problem with people who are saying this kind of stuff. You have the Dirty Harry mentality saying, make my day, you know.
I am defending my right to live. My right to live as under the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Are you telling me that if someone points a firearm at me and threatens to take my life, or points a firearm at someone else and I have the ability to help defend them and help save their life, I am not allowed to act?
No, I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that
you called me a Dirty Harry. I'm not a Dirty Harry. I'm defending my right. Any other legal citizen to live.
You just said if someone comes in and robs a bank, you want to be able to help. You want to be able to stop that person. Is that not something that Dirty Harry would do?
No, Dirty Harry is a movie.
I know Dirty Harry.
Someone attempts to rob a bank. All right, there is no guarantee that they might use that firearm the life of a witness. Now, I have a right to my life, my liberty, and my property. That does not mean that I'm playing Dirty Harry. I am exercising my constitutional right to life, liberty, and property.
How is that
playing Dirty Harry?
That's the way you're explaining it. But just the way that you said, you know, it's like, oh, if someone robs a bank, I want to be able to, you know, basically be the hero and save the day. That's basically what you said.
I am saying I'm defending my rights, my constitutional rights. I'm defending my freedom.
You would have to go back pretty far in life. When have you ever seen, even you said Dirty Harry, when have you seen a Dirty Harry really do something like that, like from the movies? Where you haven't seen that. Legal people, legal good citizens don't go around abusing their firearm rights, and it's not a right. It is a right. But you don't see that. What you are basically doing now is you're going to limit the law-abiding citizens to what they can carry, and the people who don't obey laws, which are criminals, are still going to get these guns, and they're going to get their firing right, and they're going to get them illegally. And what's going to happen? It's no different than a Columbine. The people signed federal laws. After Barack Obama signed a law, now they're going to break 25 laws. Does it matter to them? No, they're dead, and so are the people.
and to
I mean, I understand.
Mike, you're breaking up really bad, Mike.
Yeah, I thought that was just me.
No, it sounds like Mike's phone just dropped out, so I'm sure he's going to call back in a second. My co-host was tending to a friend who just lost his brother, so he's probably calling in from the road. So Cool Mike will call back. But I'll remind you, because he brought up Columbine shooting. Columbine shooters were stopped by a legal gun holder defending the lives of the other students in that building.
Actually, the Columbine shooters off themselves, I've studied the shooting.
They were stopped by a legal gun owner.
How were they stopped? If they were stopped by a legal gun owner, then how come every autopsy that was done on them said that that was a suicide?
Have you ever heard death by cop?
It was not death by cop. They off themselves. I've seen the pictures. It wouldn't be an off by a cop. It would be a suicide. It would, because what they did, and even their dead bodies suggested this, they pulled a gun. Eric Harris had the 9mm carbine in his mouth, pulled the trigger. That is not a death by cop.
Cool Mike, you're back. Your phone had dropped off before. And
yeah,
well, it's on the core part of what you said.
Oh, actually, sorry. You know, when I was trying to play Good Samaritan, pushing a lady out of, we got blizzard in Michigan, so I was trying to push her out and carry on the conversation. I should have just muted myself, and I apologize to both of you for that. But, no, it just, you know what, I understand your point. I think local levels can address concerns a lot better than can a president or a governor. I think county sheriffs, and I think whatever city you live in. Do you mind me asking what city you live in?
I live in St. Mary's County, Maryland.
Okay. I think that's a decision for you, all of you in that county or in that metro or city, to get together and to decide. You know, this is. I just don't like the idea of an umbrella over everyone, because in many, many ways, it opens the floodgates to too many other things, such as we used to make a joke. Guns. This is the Second Amendment to me is the most important amendment because it defends the First Amendment. But the thing, it used to be a joke. We used to talk about, pretty soon they're going to tell us what kind of light bulbs to use. Well, now they
already do.
Yeah. Well, that's my whole point, is that it's just now a point to where they're gonna wipe my butt for me. And I just can't. What next? I mean,
they are regulating us out of existence. You know, they tell us what type of light bulbs to buy. They tell us what type of toilets to buy. You know, and soon they're going to be putting meters on your water, and they're going to turn around and say, "Oh, you're using too much water for the number of people in your household," and they will turn your water off if you exceed what they feel you should be using. This is all coming, guys. They are going to regulate you out of existence. So there's nothing but the government as your god.
What?
Yeah, that's exactly what they're doing now. Yeah, it's crazy. I've seen these proposals, and even our local community here in South Carolina, which is a solid red state, has been proposing that. It's come up before the county council several times. Fortunately, there are people out there like me who say, get your hands off, you know, my personal life. I'm not going to have you tell me how much water or how much electricity I may use. I'm paying for it. So if I use more than what you feel might be my allotment, I am paying the damn bill. It's not their business.
Look,
that's crazy.
I'm not saying that I support every law that is ever passed by any government. I'm not saying that at all. In fact, if anything, I am libertarian on more issues than anything else. I feel that government should get out of my business. I believe that I should be able to have a gun in one hand, a Big Mac in the other.
60-ounce on your lap.
And an American flag behind me, be able to shoot the gun in the air and then proclaim that I don't give a damn. You know, it's that kind of freedom. It's just not the kind of freedom that the politicians love to use, that clean buzzword. I'm talking about the dirty kind of freedom. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, freedom, the kind of freedom that's in our Constitution and our
Declaration. What is a dirty
freedom?
A dirty freedom would be like, oh, I like
constitutional civil liberties is what dirty
stuff
freedom.
Like, I can
Ron Paul used that term.
I can say whatever I want to say. I won't get, you know, I won't get arrested, you know. Obviously there's some limits, like I can't make a threat to the president or anything like that. But I
freedom of speech is a dirty freedom?
No. He's saying he wants to have what the politicians call dirty freedoms, is to be able to say to Harry Reid to his face, I think you're a socialistic moron or whatever, and not be in trouble for it. For example, and correct me if I'm wrong, there are people, and this is actually true, there were a group of people trying to get a federal proposal on the ballot, this would have been for the last election, to eliminate federal income tax. All of them have disappeared. And like all six of them, they were from Boston area. All of them were very outspoken, but they're nowhere to be found now. But basically, I mean, be able to say what you want, dirty freedoms.
Dude,
be able to
like,
say that the way the founders wanted it, period.
No discussion. I wouldn't call it a dirty freedom. I would call it my First Amendment right.
No,
but
commenting, that's what the politicians say.
Yeah,
no,
all right.
I didn't mean to cut you guys off. Sorry about that.
No, but I've also said with the freedom of that First Amendment, that freedom to say whatever you choose to say, also comes the responsibility. Because if I say something like calling Harry Reid a dirty, rotten SOB or whatever I want to call him, I am going to have to be responsible for what I say. And if someone else turns around and challenges my statement, hey, I've got to be able to stand there and take it, because if I say it, then I've got to back it up. You know, with what you say is responsibility. And that's something that people fail to understand. They figure, oh, I can say whatever I want and, you know, and just walk away with my hands clean. No. If you open your mouth, make sure what you say you can stand up and back. Or if someone turns around and comes at you, be able to defend yourself. There is a responsibility to everything I say, even here.
Oh, I know that.
All right, you can't walk into a crowded theater and cry fire. If you do then you're responsible for your actions, and you're going to have to face the consequences.
Let me ask our caller from Maryland a question. Who did you support in the 2012 primary elections?
No. At first, I supported Ron Paul, actually.
Okay.
Because I just feel what he says, or at least most of what he says, he actually believes. You know, I don't agree with everything he has to say, but, you know, at least I know what he's saying he actually believes. Like, I don't know if Obama or Mitt Romney or Rick Santorum or any of these people, other people, actually believe what they say. I mean, it's...
And I agree. I don't disagree. I like Term Kaine before the Republicans actually set him up to get rid of him, because he believed in not only what he said, but he wasn't toting party lines. He was not a bought and paid for Republican, because as working for the feds, he saw the crimes that go, and he started talking about them, about how horrible it was. And they're just like, we can't have this guy around. But, I mean, part of my belief in that piece that was played just before you got brought on the air is that it seems like everyone always wants to find a reason to justify a violation of our Constitution, instead of people just saying, that's BS, that's not. Certain areas, there needs to be no gun law limits. And for anything, certain areas of the country, there is no need. Certain areas, I'd say parts of Chicago and stuff, you may or you may not. But I believe it's up to, you said you're in St. Mary's County or wherever it may, That I believe it's a local decision. I believe the feds need to stay out of virtually absolutely everything except for what is mandated to them in our Constitution. Other than that, state and locals can handle this. And I believe in locals a lot more than state, because your governor is just as corrupt as anyone else on the planet. That governor has plans of being a senator or congressman or president, too. So he's going to play ball with the parties and not really care about our true constitutional views, which we have seen for a long time. Go ahead, Annie.
Yes.
Sorry.
All right. Before either one of you called in, I was reading this thing. Your governor, Mike, your governor there, Jennifer Granholm, is trying to restrict the type of ammunition. Have you caught that?
She was nuts. She was governor. She's insanely nuts, Jennifer Granholm. Jennifer Granholm was our governor for 8 years. She would talk. We were running a deficit, and she'd talk about all these cuts she's going to do, and then talk about new programs. They're like, oh my! But she is very, very much a part of the healthcare, the Obama. I forget what it really is called, but the
Affordable Health Care Act.
Affordable Health Care Act. She was huge.
Just call it Obamacare.
I don't want to give him the honor, but. Here's an idea that I thought as a real, true cash conservative. I'm very fiscally conservative. Here's an idea that I thought was wonderful, and this happened in the state of Hawaii when my brother was there. Hawaii obviously is a big tourism state, but they had a large population of people who were homeless. So and you don't see that on TV, but there's a large portion of people who didn't have health care, and it was really jacking the rates up. So what basically the governor did is the governor allowed people to buy into the state program. So when the state every two years, would have companies bid on which HMO they wanted or which company, you would have 15 different companies bidding on customers, which was the state, which had many. So a person paid what they could. And for a long time, my brother said it was extremely successful, until it started making a profit. And everybody started taking the money. Everyone started wanting a taste of it and corrupting it, as usually. But we need to do things like that maybe locally. Instead of this affordable health care, I mean, I do not want a federal panel. I mean, you know how many grandmothers and grandparents are just going to be lost in this? And that's going to be us someday. We have just allowed them to walk all over us for so long.
And on the topic of gun control, real quick, you know, like I said, I don't support gun control fully. I do believe there should be certain rules, like keeping, you know, guns out of hands. But right now, I'm reading the top 15 causes of death in the U.S. The top 15.
Guns are not it.
And homicide is tied with Parkinson's at 0.7%, and suicide is 1.3%. So, according to this, I'm more likely to kill myself than I am anybody else.
Absolutely. And actually, hammers kill more people than guns do. So what are you going to do, regulate hammers? Believe it or not, people with hammers commit more homicides than people with guns.
Oh, so, yeah. I mean...
What's the point then?
When the mafia was in business, I'm sure that rate was higher, Annie. When the mafia was in business,
hey, I'm half
sure.
Italian. Watch it.
I mean,
oh man. No, you know, I came across something else, Mike. And you're big up on Facebook, like I am. We do have ourselves up, and if people are listening in, you can find us on Facebook, on Twitter. We're up on Stitcher, Spreaker, iTunes. So check us out there. And also, please remember to join our website, southernsense.webs.com. We've got a contest going on there where we're giving away Todd Allen Herndon's DVD, autographed DVD, if you follow the contest rules up on our website. But I came across this. You know the Facebook, those two women, chicks on the right? Facebook has suspended their account. And you know why? I'm trying to see if I can read. They posted something about Jay Carney, and they said, Jay Carney can kiss my assular area. And because they turned around and basically said, Jay Carney can kiss my butt, they suspended the account. So
yeah, you know, Gary Johnson had the same problem. They kept putting up new Facebooks, but Facebook was taking them down simply because they didn't like Gary Johnson, which, by the way, just because he's running as a third party or fourth party or a 100th party, those people are entitled to be on the ballot if they do whatever they're supposed to. But, I mean, it really goes to show how biased they are. If these were ladies on the left, they'd never have this problem.
No, and I've seen stuff posted up on my Facebook page at times where I'm going, oh, my God, what gutter did these minds just crawl out of? And, you know, I'd knock it off, you know, and say, all right, fine. I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to, you know, bitch or anything. Hey, listen, I'm up there. I'm putting my voice out there. And if I can't take the heat, then I should not be in this kitchen here. But so what? And does Facebook do anything about people attacking us? No. But if you dare tell Jay Carney without using a curse word that you can kiss my posterior, that is my right, my First Amendment right of free speech. Who is Facebook to say what I can or cannot say? You know, am I hurting anyone by doing it? No.
Well, they are a private company. They can
why aren't they doing equal treatment? Why aren't they treating the left the same way they're treating the right? Why is it only the people on the right that they are censoring and not the people on the left?
Well, yeah, I mean, I do have a problem with them censoring the right, and, you know, on a lot of issues, I am leaning towards the left, but, like I just said 2 seconds ago, I do have a problem with them censoring the right, and if they censored the left, I would be just as mad.
Yeah, and I agree. It is a private company. If we log on and they remove our page, it's a private company. I do agree with that. But I think one of my main concerns, not necessarily the Facebooks or the networking, it's we as people. We're just allowing way too much. One of the things Ron Paul did point out during these elections is that all of the violations, all of the illegal departments, just so many of the things that we should not allow, and we have. I mean, and now we're looking for the answers and solutions to these problems. Look no further than a mirror, because it's we who are going to solve the problems. It's not going to be an elected official. It's going to be somebody, we as people, solving the problem.
All right.
I think the biggest fraud, well, real quick, Annie, the biggest fraud is in Wisconsin. Every single person loves Scott Walker. Hey, he did this. He was doing that. Yeah, he was beating the team. Wisconsin is bouncing checks. His plan didn't work so well, huh?
This is Jerry Corsi, by the way. I just jumped on. I apologize.
Hey,
Dr. Corsi. I was just about to bring you on as soon as Mike.
Annie, play the trumpet. We got royalty in the house.
I don't think it's royalty. I think I actually have to apologize. I didn't realize you guys were expecting me to call in, so it was my fault for being late.
No, I did not get a phone number from you to call, because I went through all my stuff, and I said, okay, so I'm hoping that he remembers the number to call.
Oh, I remember. I got the email, and I apologize. It was my fault. I get so used to being called, I get lazy on these. I apologize.
Well, we'll give you 50 lashes with the wet noodle. Hey, Dr.
Well, I deserve it.
All right. I read both of your latest books, your two latest ones, and I found them very fascinating, and they do go hand in hand. And let me see. Unfortunately, they're Kindles, and I'm not a big fan of Kindles. So the fact that I actually read them on a Kindle, Mike is probably very proud of me.
Well, you've got a good point, but they are available in other formats in addition to the Kindle. But at any rate, all the e-formats are available on. So if you can read any e-books, the first one was about the Saul Alinsky being the evil genius behind Obama
right?
And then the second one, I followed up with was the Obama's plan to bankrupt America, which comes out of the two sociologists, Cloward and Piven, and their whole theory of overloading the United States with social welfare demands. So the system collapses and we abandon capitalism and go into a socialist state. And that's what both of the e-books are about. And,
yeah,
you know, what I tried to do is I tried to go back to the original sources, go back to Saul Alinsky and go back to the writings of Cloward and Piven, and show just how exactly they fit into the speeches and the rhetoric and the writing that, you know, the Obama administration is putting out. Because all this stuff, for instance, you know, tax the rich their fair share, that's all straight Saul Alinsky class warfare. It was one of his main kind of mantras, you know, the whip up the underclass by saying the rich aren't paying their fair share, even though the vast majority of taxes paid in the country are paid by the, you know, top 5% of wage earners.
Yeah, because you started off the book on, I'm talking about the how President Obama is bankrupting the U.S. You start that book off with Lyndon Johnson. I'm surprised you didn't go as far back as, like, Teddy Roosevelt, though.
Well, you could have. I mean, it just, I didn't want to lose everybody. It's a short book. I mean, you can go back as far as, you know, the 1850s and the implementation of Marx around the world, the criticisms of the Civil War, and Marx's criticisms of the Civil War. I mean, this whole progressive idea ultimately goes, you can find traces of it in Plato, you know, the Republic. They're arguing about why it shouldn't be a fair society in which everybody shares equally. And, you know, the discussion even back in ancient Greece was that that's a great idea, but life isn't fair and you can't achieve it. It's not fairness that you're after, because, you know, that means taking away from those who have a great amount and redistributing it, and it never works. What you want to do is you want to create incentive for everybody and lift the entire society up, which is where private enterprise comes in. But this is an idea that's been debated back and forth going back into ancient Greece. The whole idea of socialism, or ultimately communism, is a fairer system. It just has never worked.
All right, we have a caller in on the line. He goes by Kid Talks Politics. Area code 502, you wanted to make a comment? Area code 502, Kid Talk Politics. I guess he went offline.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
My phone.
Cloward and Piven were two sociologists at Columbia when Obama was there. And they had been propounding this theory. They basically said everybody in the United States ought to have a right, an entitlement, to earn $100,000 a year, given it to the
government.
Can you
guys hear me?
Yes, we can. You wanted to make a comment?
Oh, yeah, sorry about that. My phone was on mute. I wanted to say, going back to the gun control thing for a second, I think the whole reason that a lot of people are trying to push for gun control right now, and they're saying, how could you be so mean to all the kids who died in Connecticut and not push for gun control measures? I think they're really missing the purpose of the Second Amendment, and the purpose of the Second Amendment was not only, and I would say wasn't even mainly, for self-defense. I think the self-defense against fellow citizens who are acting illegally. I think mainly that the Second Amendment was meant to protect yourself from tyrannical government. So it was a security against our government becoming tyrannical. And the one of the proofs that that actually works is that during World War II, one of the main reasons Japan didn't attack the U.S. mainland was that everyone here had guns. And so that's a very good system.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are saying, like, that's so radical, like Pierce Morgan was saying,
no,
that's such a radical idea.
Well, you are absolutely correct. And Dr. Corsi, did you want to address that?
I think that the attempt to exploit the shootings to limit the Second Amendment is absolutely misguided. I mean, the fact is that in school shootings are better prevented if, in fact, there were armed guards or armed teachers. Because, you know, these gun-free zones just attract violence. And the other
point
we've been writing about is WNP.
If there were such a thing as a gun-free zone, then that would be awesome. I mean, like, if you could actually create something that's a gun-free, like guns could not physically enter that, then sure, that'd be great to have schools as a gun-free zone. But the problem is, we are finite humans, and we can't create a gun-free zone. Like, people will always come in with guns. So if we could come up with a system, like some sort of scanner thing, that takes a gun off someone as they enter an area and made it completely secure, I mean, obviously this is impossible, but theoretically, then a gun-free zone would work. But as we're finite humans, we can't do that. Gun-free zones will never work. So the next thing to do to prevent things is to make it a gun-flooded zone so that no one attempts anything.
We've been writing about in WND that there's a very high relationship between the violence, the shooters, and having been prescribed drugs in the schools. What we're doing right now is we're prescribing a ton of drugs to kids as behavioral control without any appreciation.
For like ADHD?
Sorry if you hear me breathing into the mic. I'm smoking an e-cig, so.
The issue is these drugs cause violence, and instead of dealing with behavioral problems in a sense of a counseling setting or family setting, prescribing drugs is actually the worst thing we could do. It's only going to treating the shooters as if they're a mental illness problem and they need drugs is only going to cause more violence. The drugs are largely the problem.
Are you referring to ADHD in that kind of like mental drugs like that, like ADHD?
Yeah, that'd
drugs?
certainly be one of them. I mean, they prescribe drugs to kids in schools for, that's probably one of the biggest ones, but depression or other behavioral problems, drugs are commonly prescribed. And we've been writing, I wrote an article, I interviewed two of the top psychiatrists in the world who said that drugs are the problem. And too many psychiatrists in the schools prescribing drugs are creating a violent setting because of the reaction these kids are having to the drugs that are being prescribed. It isn't the guns that cause the violence. It's the, in many cases, it's the drugs that are causing the violence.
Yeah, Dr. Corsi, I do agree with you because I remember back in the 60s, I had a cousin who was diagnosed with the attention deficit disorder, and they were giving him medications which really didn't seem at the time to do him much good. And we grew up in a large family, being Italian, you've got cousins all over the place. And for us, for our family, it was like, well, why isn't someone making him responsible for his behavior? Why can't you drill it into his head that what he is doing is wrong, instead of saying, oh, it's a medical condition that he's bouncing off the walls? No, it's a discipline condition. And eventually he got himself off those drugs and he took responsibility for his actions. But this is what they're not teaching kids today, responsibility.
Right. I think you're right. And also a lot of these problems are problems that generations before would have been dealt with within the family or with some, knowledgeable assistance. I mean, a kid gets moved from a school they didn't want to leave, and they're depressed. Well, that's not a kid you start giving drugs to. It's a kid you start talking about, the fact that they're going to make new friends and they have to deal with these emotional issues. You can't taper over a drug over emotional issues, especially in developing adolescence, by prescribing drugs, which is what is commonly done today in the schools.
Now, I completely agree with you, but yet people aren't willing to admit that this is the problem. Instead, they're going to say, oh, it's the evil drug, it's the evil guns, but guns don't kill people. People kill people. And if it had not, if the guns were taken away, they would have gone in there with a baseball bat or a knife or strapped on a bomb. They would have done something else if they're hell-bound on doing it. And this is what I think they're not getting.
I agree entirely. I mean, what you've got to face is that no society is going to be safer by disarming the people. It just sets up the opportunity for tyranny to take over. And our founders knew this when they wrote the Second Amendment. The schools or the, I mean, I've been to Israel many times. In Israel, teachers are armed. People are armed, you know, openly in society. It's actually a much safer environment. You know, you see the terrorist events where a terrorist will grab a bulldozer at a construction site and try to run into the traffic and kill people. Well, they don't get very far. They don't get very far because there's an armed, responsible citizenry that is going to protect others from terrorist acts if they can.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it was mentioned that it would be a utopian idea if we did have gun-free zones, but somehow or other they would manage to find them a way to get the gun passed. And now they even have these new printers out that you can actually print yourself a disposable firearm that would not show up on any device that would, you know, try to prevent a gun from going in. So there's always a way around it. It's just a matter of making people responsible for their actions, which is what I think is the whole problem here. People are not willing to take responsibility.
I agree. And also, I think you've got the Obama administration with a political agenda, which is to disarm the American people. And they're utilizing and exploiting these incidents to advance that agenda. It's not a genuine reaction. It's like Rahm Emanuel said, don't let any crisis go to waste. It's an opportunity to exploit people's natural sympathies to say, well, we'll take the guns away, because that's what the political agenda was to begin with. This was just an opportunity to advance that political agenda.
Yeah, now, bringing you back to your book, Obama's attempt to bankrupt the United States, I had exactly that Rahm Emanuel statement as one of my notes here. And you got to bear with me, because like I said, I'm not accustomed to Kindle, so I've got the Kindle right now on my Droid, and I'm trying to read my notes. So
right.
I like a hard book in my hand. Good way I can put little sticky notes on there and I can flip it.
I'm
old fashioned. But I made notations where you were stating that now some 51 million Americans, that's basically one out of six people, receive food stamps. And I remember the war on hunger. And at the time, there were soup kitchens, there were other charity organizations out there. And I remember telling someone there's no reason for someone to be hungry in the United States, because there are places that you can go to get yourself a meal. But I think everyone turned to government and says, you've got to solve the hunger problem. So now we've got a food stamp president. And you outline all this in your wonderful book.
Well, see, this is the point that, in other words, the dependency on government is part of the leftist agenda. And if you get people dependent on government because of food stamps or unemployment insurance or any method, any means, disability, look how many people now we've got saying are disabled in order to get continuing government benefits after their unemployment runs out. The problem is that once we become dependent on government, that's a formula to lose our freedoms, to lose private enterprise, and a government which, you know, is showing up to say, I'm here to help you, is a government to run away from, because that's a government that ultimately wants to enslave you.
I do believe Ronald Reagan made some sort of a quote to that effect, that government's never really here to help you. I got my co-host finally back. Mike, I know you want to ask Dr. Korski some questions.
Yeah, Doc, Ronald Reagan said like the 13 most scariest words were, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. He also increased the size of government too. I have a question. What in the hell is going on with the Republicans? It's like most of our lives we're supporting them. It's just like the last 10 years. If you didn't see that they were Republicans on the TV screen, if you just listened, you wouldn't know half of them are. I mean, they sound like socialists. What's going on? I mean, it used to be that this kind of talk in the party to get you hung.
Well, the problem with the Republicans have had is, again, you know, it's come back and forth. I mean, I've been rereading Phyllis Schlafly's book on A Choice, Not an Echo, that she wrote to promote Barry Goldwater in 1964. And it was the same problem with the Republican Party, before Ronald Reagan, really, which was that the Republican Party is an establishment party. That's if you take a look at John Boehner and Mitch McConnell and the others, they're there to preserve the power of the Republican Party, and they play this kabuki dance with the Democrats, which looks like they're opposing the Democrats, but really they agree with the Democrats on 90% of the agenda. The Republicans want to spend money too. They want to grow the government too. They just don't maybe want to do it as much. And so someone who looks at this from a conservative perspective immediately feels like, as I do, that the Republican Party doesn't speak for me. Certainly not John Boehner and Mitch McConnell and the establishment Republican Party, because they're 99% in agreement with the Obama. I mean, look, they're going to come back from this retreat they've just had, and suddenly, without a fight, we're going to allow the debt ceiling to be increased for 90 days.
Oh, I saw that. That was the next thing on the tip of my tongue, how they're raising the debt ceiling without raising the debt ceiling.
And without demanding any cuts in spending.
We don't need to cut spending. We don't need to. They're going to mint that coin.
Yeah, right.
Everything will be solved overnight. They're going to make it. Okay.
I think we better start minting a $5 trillion coins is what we need, not $1 trillion.
What new gimmick and bullshit do they come up with? Like, I was listening to people just talk about how wonderful this is. I mean, the problem is going to be solved. I'm thinking, have we really come to a point where this many people in our country are this stupid? I mean, they're just this clueless?
The problem is you get so many people dependent on the government. I mean, you know, okay, so let's say you shut down the government and people don't get their Social Security checks. You know, there's millions of people for whom not getting one or two or three checks is going to put them in financial ruin. I mean, people are living on the edge right now. And again, that's another way the government likes to have it. If you're that dependent on the government, you'd rather have the government increase its power and increase its spending rather than disrupt your flow of checks. And, you know, this is where we've allowed it to get.
Absolutely. And in the new budget proposal that the Republicans have, they put this thing in there, which some on the Democrats are saying is a violation of the Constitution, where if the Senate fails to pass the budget by, I believe it's April 15th, I forget what
right,
the date
April
was.
April 15th, yeah.
That they will cut off. They're not going to stop the checks. They're going to put the checks to the senators and congressmen into an escrow account. And then once the bill is budget is passed, then they will release the funds. So technically they're being paid, but they're just not getting the checks actually.
Well, you know, these are the kinds of gimmicks that I think make people go crazy, that, you know, feel, again, like no one – this, I think, hurt Romney, is that the people who didn't vote, I think, were people who felt, what's the difference? Romney's going to be basically the same kind of candidate as Obama, maybe Republican, maybe a little different, but there wasn't any clear standing up on Romney's part saying that we, you know, need to cut spending or that we need to get in control of an imperial presidency. The Republicans would be just, you know, George W. Bush passed prescription drugs and was pushing the agenda that I said was, you know, the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America, which I said was part of the North American Union agenda. And this was a Republican president.
Yeah, and I do believe they're still going ahead with that north-south highway that cuts through the middle of the United States from Canada all the way down to Mexico. And
they implement these things now in stages. They'll implement it piecemeal and deny that they're doing, but over time it gets done by pieces.
Absolutely.
That's what they do.
Absolutely. And along the way, there are going to be checkpoints manned by Mexican soldiers on U.S. sovereign soil. I love that part.
Well, And how about, you know, in Mexican customs offices in Kansas City? I mean, these were the kinds of things that they think are completely okay. But, you know, we have, these are going to be very hard fights because we've now, you know, we did not secure the border when we had the opportunity to do so back when, you know, we had 2005, 2006, when we could have, when we passed secure fence laws, we were going to build a, you know, double fence on the border. And, of course, then it got revised. People said, well, you know, it's environmentally unsound. And there was all kinds of objections raised to it. Even Republican Kay Bailey Hutchinson did everything she could to block a fence being built. And again, these are the problems. You do not, just because someone's a Republican, if they say they're conservative, they could still be for big government and globalism agendas.
Yeah, I agree. And while they were talking about building this fence and tightening border security, they said, oh, we can allow Mexican truckers to bring their vehicles across the border and, you know, drive through the United States. What we'll do is we'll put these catalytic converters on their vehicles for free. It'll cost the U.S. government something like, I don't know what it was, $5,000. Put these catalytic converters on these Mexican trucks so that they can travel through the United States. Oh, we're saving the environment. The EPA is going to do this. But nothing prevented these truck drivers from turning around, going back over the borders, taking the converters off and selling them. It just
right.
made no sense. It made no sense to me.
I know. It's, you know, and the Mexican trucks now are coming into the United States. We finally lost that battle. That battle got fought and fought and fought. And, you know, I've been reporting on it since 2005. And finally, under the Obama administration, they just capitulated. And Ray LaHood, the Department of Transportation, promulgated rules. And the Mexican trucks are being allowed in the United States to compete with U.S. truckers. Within 5 or 6 years, it's going to be a really recognizable influx of Mexican trucks.
Yes, and our tax dollars are putting catalytic converters on each and every one of them as they cross the border.
Right.
These are our tax dollars at work, guys.
And not being concerned whether the Mexican truck drivers follow the same rules or speak English or all the other things that we were promised would happen, you can be assured none of that's going to be really enforced or dependable.
Yeah, they think. Don't know if they can read the American signs, much less whether they can read the signs if they were in Spanish. You know,
won't keep a log, won't follow the rules. You know, rigs are not going to be safety checked.
Yeah, and what happens when the first road death of an American citizen is caused by a Mexican truck driver?
And we see this. We see this. Your book detailed an awful lot of. I think in some ways that should be in classrooms. But, I mean, we see in detail the slow – it's almost as if right in front of us is a big billboard. This is what's next. But we think in our mind, well, they're only at number 40 and there's 10,000. Well, now they're at 5,000. And they keep moving and we're like, well, it's only 5,000 now. I mean, sooner or later that checklist is going to be complete.
Right. And they expect that what happens is by the time – incrementally things are done, Americans stop watching it, it's not stopped, and the globalists who never quit pursuing their goals ultimately get what they wanted.
Yeah. Now I want to remind everyone that you have two brand new books out. One is going to be technically released on February 6th. That one is Saul Alinsky, The Evil Genius Behind Obama. But if anyone wants to get the Kindle version, they can download it now. The hard copy will be available in February. You have currently brand new released President Obama's plan to bankrupt the USA. And I have a link up on the show page that people can click on and find both of these books on Amazon. Dr. Corsi, I read them both.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate
it. They go hand in hand. Oh, you also have a new website app that I found also. That's 1776nation.com. You want to tell us about that?
Well, that's much more where I'm publishing for writings I'm doing for the Tea Party specifically. I've been supporting, for instance, I've written a couple things on that recently on the guns. And Very few people realize Obama, I guess it was last week, had this big signing ceremony. We could do all these executive orders. But if you look, what he didn't sign a single executive order. All he did was proclamations, which had no binding effect of law. Yet they rolled out this ceremony as if Obama was going to limit Second Amendment rights and create the impression that he was going to be able to get away with doing this. He wasn't stopped. And, in fact, very few people realize that all Obama did was recommend studies and, you know, recommend a new ATF head. But none of the documents that Obama signed in that television ceremony with the kids behind him, you know, exploiting the kids again, none of those had binding impact of law. They were not executive orders. And nobody realized that. So I published an editorial to that effect in 1776 Nation, and on teaparty.org, my editorials on these subjects are also getting published.
Yeah, and I do remember he wanted Todd Jones to be secure the nomination for ATF, but if anyone knows anything about Todd Jones, he is not the world's best person for the ATF. He is currently the acting director, but he also, when some of these ATF agents came forward and began to blow wide open Fast and Furious, he basically went on air and threatened them, saying that whistleblowers will be dealt with. He wanted them to go through the chain of command. Well, hell, they tried the chain of command, and that didn't work. They were forced to blow the whistle on the illegal trafficking of guns over the Mexican border.
In fact, what his job was mainly to keep the lid on the crisis. And in fact, I think we've been selling guns not only to Mexico. I think we've been selling guns through Libya to Al-Qaeda. I think this is what Benghazi was all about. I think our ambassador was over there negotiating the entrance of guns into, you know, this Middle Eastern chaos, because we had supported these same people, these same Al-Qaeda elements, in overcoming and overthrowing Gaddafi.
Right.
Obama saying that Al-Qaeda is defeated. Obama knows that with the Arab Spring, it led into a resurgence of the Islamic Brotherhood, and that we were sending guns into that, just like we were sending guns into the Mexican drug cartels.
Yeah, and those guns that Christopher was dealing with was also going through Egypt. Dr. Corsi, we're down to our final 2.5 minutes. I wish we had more time with you, so I am going to invite you back again, and
sure,
I'm going to slap your hand.
I'll be happy to come back with you again.
Okay,
well, thank you, and I really appreciate it, and God bless, and let's just keep fighting, because you know, these are critical issues for the Constitution and for the future.
Doc, always a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Sorry we didn't have the band for your arrival, but we will next time.
Well, I apologize. I apologize for being late, and thank you for being gracious enough to accept me when I came in.
No, thank you so much. I also want to thank our two callers, Kids Talk Politics and the other gentleman that called in from Maryland. We enjoyed the debate and conversation with both of our callers. One reminder that we're coming back on Friday, and our guest Friday will be Evan Siet, who's the comedic writer for Bill Maher, and we're going to have fun teasing him about being a conservative writing for Bill Maher. So until then, everyone have a healthy, happy, and safe week, and we thank you for listening. So enjoy your week, and we'll see you again, same bat time, same bat station on Friday. Good night, and God bless.
Everyone.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.